food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melodie.
Well, we have Wendy Wilson joining us this afternoon. I believe she's already on the line, but before we say hello to Wendy, we're going to go ahead and give a market report. Sorry, Wendy, you have to wait. We're going to give the market report here today for gold and silver. A lot of pressure, of course, on the metals today. An incredible day for the dollar. Although gold is making its way back, the New York spot price up, or I should say down, 780, 780 at 1154.70. You have silver down 14 at 15.58. Platinum is down 13 at 1120. And palladium is down 14 at 791. So it's clawing its way back, but the USDX today, that's coming down a little bit, 99.74. Went to a 12-year high overnight trade. Euro hit a 12-year low. So the USDX today is up 0.98 at 99.74. Crude oil up 3 cents, 0.03.
Yay!
Woo-hoo!
3 cents a barrel.
Something's up.
Yeah.
48.32, and we also have the paper markets today. They were up most of the day, but seems like they couldn't keep their leads. You have the Dow down 27 points, 17,635. The NASDAQ down 9 of 48.49. The S&P was down basically unchanged, down 390 at 2,040. The 10-year yield, that's beginning to drop once again on the yield, 2.11%, down 0.2. Euro, 105. 105 on the euro, down 1.27. So all the currencies are just falling. That's being the biggest. And yet, I remember when our currency, when our dollar was dropping, our stock market went down. But here you have Germany, London, and, you know, all the European markets are up big. Germany was up almost 3%. They were up over 300 points. This is Germany. 11.805 on the Germany DAX. So, Wendy Wilson. Good afternoon, Wendy. Thank you for joining us from the Apothecary Herbs.
Thank you, Melodie. Happy to be with y'all. Hey, Al.
How you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing good.
What are
good.
We going to talk about today? Cancer chaos, medical blunders?
I don't know. You pick. Which one?
I'd probably give them. I think I could get more laughs out of medical blunders. I don't know if that's true or false. Which one do you think?
Well, let's go for it. You know, people believe that, you know, modern medicine would, you know, they have an impression it can do no wrong or harm. My brother calls a lot of what the doctors do the SWAG method, and it stands for scientific wild-ass guess. Mm-hmm. But some think the odds of major mistakes that happen during treatments are slight compared to the number of procedures that are carried out each year. But you know what? Underwriters would disagree because malpractice insurance is one of the most expensive budget items for doctors and hospitals. So the risk is calculated, and this determines the malpractice premiums. So let's look at some of our trusted providers for a minute. A lot of us receive medical treatment, but today can be kind of risky. You can ask the family of 17-year-old Jessica Stantolin, who underwent heart and lung transplant surgery at the Duke University Medical Center right here in Durham, North Carolina. But instead, they installed the wrong organs from the wrong donor with the wrong blood type. Jessica suffered brain damage and died 2 weeks later. It was determined that there was a lack of safeguards to blame. Or how about the couple from New York who sought help from a fertility clinic through an in vitro procedure using the couple's own egg and sperm? There was a mistake at the clinic. They used somebody else's sperm, and the wife gave birth to a child of a darker skin color than hers. So there was also now the 47-year-old veteran who went to
wasn't a dog. Go ahead.
Oh, don't get me going now. All right, so there was a 47-year-old veteran who went to the Los Angeles VA Medical Center, and where it was determined that his testicle pain required surgery. They recommended removing the left testicle, and doctors mistakenly removed the healthy right testicle. There's hundreds of these stories, especially those people who have, you know, later found out the surgeon left medical instruments inside them, right? So
these
mistakes cost millions a year because of the long-term consequences. Now, this one is interesting. This is a 67-year-old female who was admitted to a hospital for a neurological problem, and she was treated instead for cardiac encephalopathy instead. The treatment is you prep them for open-heart surgery. They schedule that the day before. If you know anything about the procedure, they make an incision in the groin. They puncture an artery, thread a tube up, snaking it up to the heart. There's a lot of risk of infection, bleeding, and heart attack. She was on the operating table an hour when her attending physician was looking for her, found her in the OR, and this is a basic mistake of returning the patient to the wrong floor, the wrong room, and the surgeon doesn't bother reading the patient's chart before he begins to operate on the patient. And these aren't isolated mistakes, by the way.
Question. You know, everybody makes mistakes.
Sure.
Question is, who makes a lot of mistakes? How many mistakes do you make, and are you held responsible for those mistakes?
Well, see, now the underwriters have all these numbers down pat. They understand this all too well. The risks of allopathic medicine are extremely high. The risks are like Russian roulette, basically. So how about Rhode Island Hospital? This hospital has a problem with their doctors repeating devastating surgical mistakes. In 2007... a neurosurgeon operated on the wrong side of a patient's brain. Can you imagine drilling into the wrong side of a skull in a wrong place? But anyway, this happens more often than not.
Imagine
now, Melody.
Wake. You know, some of their anesthesia doesn't necessarily knock you out. It just doesn't. You don't feel any pain.
Well,
it'd be like
let me just
laying there and you can't move, can't speak, and you know they're drilling in the wrong side
of your
head.
Place. Right, exactly. Well, this happens a lot. A lot of times in the operating room, people don't understand that, you know, OR staff, assistants to the surgeon, will post the x-rays or studies upside down or flip them on the wrong side. and then the doctor doesn't notice and he starts to operate in the wrong place. I used to work for neurosurgeons in Charlotte, North Carolina. I worked for anesthesiologists way back when, and this kind of mistake happens to patients, and then the patients are lied to. For example, there was the surgery for a cervical laminectomy. The x-ray was posted upside down. The surgeon didn't check the records, proceeded to make an incision. He discovered the lumbar vertebrae was perfectly healthy. So the surgeon realized the mistake and then moved to the cervical end of the spine to make his second incision and operated on the collapsed disc. The patient, though, was told in recovery that the surgeon thought he saw something on the x-ray and did some exploratory surgery. So the risk is entirely the patient's. There's extra costs for the OR time, the anesthesia, and that's all. All that is charged back to the patient. So when the doctors make mistakes, it can be costly.
It's like politicians.
Well, and how about this one? People can lose healthy organs just by going to the hospital. This is an example of a patient that was admitted to Park and Nicollet Methodist Hospital in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, for a tumor thought to be cancerous on his kidney. He had the surgery to remove the sick kidney, and the next day, pathology department calls and notifies the medical staff that the surgeon removed the wrong kidney because they had a healthy one in their hands. The patient was then left to survive on one sick kidney until he could have a kidney transplant. So this is all malpractice.
Any chance he could get his own kidney back?
You know, after pathology cut it up, I doubt it. You know?
It was destroyed then in the all right.
Right. Well, and then here's the one that really makes me shiver. This was an anesthesiologist issue. I know something about anesthesia. I was educated about it when I worked for a group called Southeast Anesthesia. It's kind of tricky business. Well, here's a West Virginia man. He was admitted to Raleigh General Hospital in Beckley, West Virginia, for abdominal exploratory surgery. And this goes into what you were mentioning, Al. The anesthesiologist gave the patient PrEP drugs to prepare them for surgery, and these drugs are not the gas anesthesia, but it renders the patient doesn't render them unconscious, but motionless. So the gas anesthesia wasn't administered properly to make the patient unconscious, so the patient wasn't able to move or to speak, but he could feel everything the surgeon was doing. I know.
That's scary. That's like a horror movie or something.
Exactly. The medical staff reports this as a phenomenon called anesthetic awareness, but I call it malpractice.
Yep. Yeah, I know.
So,
how do these mistakes take place, and are they the result of just random bad luck that's bound to happen? You got a big business, big industry. There's bound to be some mistakes, or is it because people are generally incompetent, or is it because there's a rush to get in, get the money, and get out of the next operating room?
I think it may be a combination of all of the above. I know that the neurosurgeons, I worked for neurologists, I've worked for neurosurgeons, for anesthesiologists, and I know that in certain practices, especially the surgery realm, they have quotas that they have to meet. And yeah. if a doctor's not seeing enough patients and moving them through like a conveyor belt, he may lose his position in the practice. And yep. This is really scary stuff. But this is what happens. And some doctors, you know, they just can't operate like that. And they wind up going into a different, you know, a sole practice or something.
But do they get access to facilities?
Yeah, they do. They can still get privileges. It's just that, you know, but I think when you start putting quotas on people like surgeons, I think they're bound to make errors, you know, because they're moving so quickly. But, you know, even Hollywood is not spared. Even with all the money these Hollywood folks have, they're not spared mistakes because actor Dana Carvey, he was admitted to the hospital for this life-saving double bypass heart operation, only to discover later the surgeons performed bypass on the wrong artery. So Mr. Carvey, he was then 45, married, two young children. He was subjected to a second bypass operation, but with more risk than before. And he sued his doctors for $7.5 million. And their media reported that the surgeon stated he made an honest mistake because Carvey had unusual arteries in his heart. So big mistakes result in paying big bucks, and the malpractice underwriters for allopathic medicine know this all too well. They do.
What sort of lessons did you learn while you were associated with allopathic medicine? I mean, how much of the, did you learn lessons that actually pushed you off into the world of herbs?
I think it helped. I really did. I mean, when I went in to work in my young 20s and 30s into the field of allopathic medicine, you know, I thought medicine was, the thing to do. It was scientific. It was smart. It had all these neat little gadgets, microscopes, everything. What could possibly be better than this? And then I started observing and experiencing as someone on the inside of what can really go wrong. And I thought to myself, oh, Lord, people are actually, in many cases, being experimented on, and they don't even know it. Okay. So, and this is why doctors will have either like a dog tag medallion, or they'll even have it tattooed on their chest, no code. Okay, so these guys, they don't want to be on life support. They know what happens in situations like that. So there's a lot of treatment medical staff people will not take themselves, but are, forced to give on other patients in the hospital. It's just scary.
I've heard that nurses and doctors frequently won't accept when they contract cancer. At least on some occasions, they just refuse to take the treatment that they may have been giving for the past number of years. But certainly, even if they haven't applied it themselves, they've heard enough where they say, oh, not me.
Well, they understand anybody in oncology, and maybe next time we can touch on the cancer chaos topic. Anybody in oncology knows it's 100% mortality for the cancer treatment there.
Yeah.
Truly is. We should go into the horrors of what patients aren't told about chemo next time, and what it can really do. And patients have no idea what they're in for, really. I mean, they get the tip of the iceberg, from their oncology staff, but they really don't get into what could really go wrong with chemo treatments. So,
why is there such a problem between reports that say that chemo is ineffective, it doesn't work the way it's supposed to work or alleged to work, and the disconnect? Why do the doctors keep on pushing it?
There's a billion reasons.
Is this just pure money? Just money. Yeah. Is that what this is?
Yeah, it's a billion reasons. It's just the same thing with the vaccines. They already know that vaccines don't build immunity, don't protect you from anything. It's a big money maker, and it also weakens the immune system, so it gives you a perpetual stream of patients to the medical system. So, it's a money maker. I know we can save the guts of that topic for later, but I can read you a quote from Dr. Alan Levin. He's the author of The Healing Cancer. He's an MD. He says, most cancer patients in the United States die of chemotherapy. Chemotherapy doesn't eliminate breast, colon, or lung cancers. This fact has been documented for over a decade, yet doctors still use chemo for these cancers.
You would think that someone, there should be, why aren't lawyers, for example, going after these doctors because the chemotherapy doesn't work, someone dies, they've had money essentially extorted from them.
Right.
Why don't the lawyers to take this down?
Well,
I mean,
that's a good question.
It seems like a natural attack for attorneys. They say, look, you guys are con artists.
Yeah, well, you would think. I mean, how much money do you have to spend on it? That's the question I have for you. Because, doctors and hospitals and the AMA, they can all team up, and they could keep you spinning in court for years.
Yeah, I understand.
So, but, hey, there is a place where the underwriters know there's essentially zero risk, and that's in the realm of natural therapies. That's why there's no malpractice insurance for those types of practitioners. So I tell people, do your homework before you take a treatment. Is it going to strengthen me? Is it going to make me weaker? Am I going to be on drugs for life, or am I going to be independent of drugs? Always ask those questions. Do your homework before you do anything.
All right, Wendy, why don't you give us some contact information?
Absolutely, because we have lots of information at thepowerherbs.com. Of course, they can call for a free product catalog. We'll send that out to them at 866-CALL-TODAY, 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, and empower yourself. Thanks, guys.
All right, Wendy, thank you. Look forward to talking to you again next Wednesday. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. I'm going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Does the cost and risk of conventional healthcare concern you? Wouldn't you prefer inexpensive solutions to health problems rather than disease management? If so, tune into Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
And we're going to continue the 2015 dollar special. We did some changes around in there to change the special around to give options to everyone. We're going to continue with the 1 ounce gold eagle coin. 3 of the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle coin. You'll receive three of those and 20 Silver Eagles dated 2015s. They're 1 ounce silver coins, 20 of those, a tube. This all includes your shipping for $2,015. So it's a great little package. Give us a call at our telephone number, 1-800-375-4188. The 2015 special, 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And if you'd like to send us a question for the program, send it to questions@dgscoins.com. And if you'd like to give us a call today, if you have any questions, call us at 1-855-566-3738. It's a toll-free number, 855-566-3738.
I've got a little article here that was ultimately from Ms. Shedlock. And the headline is Wholesale Trade. Sales down, inventories up. It reports that the U.S. Commerce Department monthly wholesale report for January shows that sales are down while inventories continue to rise. It's not good news. Sales are down 3.1% from the revised December level. Sales for December revised lower by 0.5%. Sales down 1% from January of 2014, meaning sales are down across the board in the last year by 1%. That's not enormous, but it's down rather than up. All right, sales of electronic goods down 4.4, metals and minerals except petroleum down 4.1, non-durable goods down 4.6% from December. Those numbers are from December, not for the year, not for the past 12 months, just since December. Sale of petroleum and petroleum products were down 13.5% since last December. I mean, that's just mind-boggling. 13.5%. This is one of the fundamental commodities of the industrial world. We've had a 13% decline, according to this report, in the last couple of months. That has to point to something like a global and or U.S., certainly recession, arguably depression. Now, we're only talking about a couple of months here. It could be just a blip, but just the same, 13.5% down since December. That's astonishing. Drugs are down 3.5% since December. And at the same time that the sales are down, it follows as a natural thing. Well, they're not selling as much, so they make all of their products with the idea, how much can we sell 3 months from now, 6 months from now, and so on. They anticipate sales, and they produce product based on the presumption that they're going to sell X number of items in the month of March. And if they don't, because sales are down, then they generate increased inventories. They have more goods stacking up and say, gee, we thought we'd sell them in February and didn't, and March we didn't. And so we got a stack of these things sitting around, and there's lists here. Inventories are up 6.2% from January of 2014. All right. They list durable goods and electrical goods and motor vehicles, non-durable and K-paper products, and they're all up. And the point is, if sales are down, so is cash flow, so are profits. This should cause some businesses to slide closer to bankruptcy and also increase unemployment. Sales are down. We can't. How can we afford to maintain, keep the employees that we had when we anticipated we're going to sell 100 items in the month of March and we're only selling, say, 90? Can we hold on to our entire staff then, or do we have to lay somebody off? If inventories are generally rising, sales are going down, inventories are rising, they will ultimately be liquidated by selling products at lower prices. All right? If we're not buying as many cars as they anticipated in the months of January, February, and March, It kind of signals sometime around April or May, we can expect that they're going to put some cars on the market at a reduced price in order to liquidate their inventory. That inventory represents capital. They put in money in making these trucks, these cars. So, and they need to get that money back to keep their business cycling and functioning properly. So they got to sell that truck. They've got to sell that car. They got to get some kind of money back into the business. And that means if inventories are rising, we should be seeing lower prices in the near future. Now, lower prices, again, are consistent with deflation. Deflation is a hallmark for economic depression. What we're getting out of this is we're just saying, look, if sales are down and inventories are up, this isn't any genius stuff. It's just saying we are sliding downward. And the reports of green shoots and recoveries and so on remain improbable and unreliable. And all of us, you know, it may be just a blip in the road. It may be that, you know, things will turn around here in the next couple of months. But if the figures are reliable, particularly just in terms of from December forward and so on, indicates we've got a problem right now. And the problem is we need to at least keep an eye on it. And if the problem persists, we are headed deeper into depression. If we do, there's going to be trouble. This is not just going to be a situation where we are inconvenienced. Oh, we're having a depression. Won't be able to take a vacation to Tahiti this year. We're going to have to settle for going to Florida. No, it'll be more than that. Although not necessarily this year. I'm not giving you a timing signal on this because I don't know. But we see the reports, and we talk about it on a regular basis, from government who says the unemployment rate is down and the inflation rate is reasonable and blah, blah, blah. But when we get some real numbers, it's more evidence, nope, the government is lying to us. And again, why do they lie? Unless we are in a precarious position. And what the government is essentially telling us is, well, we're walking across this rickety old bridge. And you've all seen the old rickety bridge put together with just some, you know, little planks and one thing and another. And it's suspended between a couple of ropes. And it goes across this chasm. And it was built by the natives in some remote country. And it's something out of Harrison Ford and, I don't know, the movies he did as Indiana Jones and so on. We've got everybody seeing that. And they're telling us, just don't look down. Just look straight ahead as you walk across the bridge. Well, when they tell you don't look down, that's a way of telling you this is dangerous. We're in a dangerous position. We're going to try to shore up your confidence. We're going to try to keep you moving across the bridge. Don't look down. But the truth is, if they're telling you not to look down, well, it may be good advice, but it's also evidence that the bridge is pretty rickety. And that's where you and I are right now. We are crossing this chasm on this bridge made out of a couple of planks and some ropes. And we have to wonder. You know, we may get across the other side. I'm not saying we won't. But we are certainly, this is a peculiar and seemingly precarious position. And if it weren't, nobody would be telling us, don't look down. No one would be lying to us about the unemployment rate, the inflation rate, and whatever else. If, you know, if we were just having a little bump in the road, okay, tell the truth about it. Just hit a pothole, no big thing. All right? But if we're going into, we're headed into 100 miles of washboard roadway, this is not a pothole. This is something that can tear the transmission loose out of your car, your truck, if you're not careful. It can vibrate parts of the vehicle off. You know what I'm saying? So, bring it to your attention. I'm bringing it to your attention just to say, look, you look around, you can see some evidence. It tells you we are in a precarious position. Maybe it gets better, maybe it gets worse, but in a precarious position, get your life vests. Get close to a life boat. Maybe we don't need it. All right? But as with the Titanic,
there aren't enough lifeboats on the ship. There may not even be enough life vests. It is incumbent on you, recognizing, look, we're in turbulent waters. Looks like icebergs out there. Not a bad idea to protect yourself just in case. Probably not, just in case. Get ready. One of the ways you do that, of course, you know, I mean, everybody knows. But go ahead, Melody.
And it doesn't even really help with the dollar getting stronger. It makes our goods more expensive to the rest of the world. They're just going to be buying elsewhere.
I understand.
So it's just putting additional pressure, you know, on our economy already. So it's like, what the heck are they doing? I mean, what is going on? And you have the free fall of the euro. I mean, it's like when you have currencies in free fall, it's not a good thing. Yes, to put pressure on your currency so your goods are, you know, cheaper to the world and so forth. I get that. But not when it drops.
Even that is debatable.
It
you
is.
Know, the reality
it
is this. The government is sitting back and saying, look,
they're
we are
trying.
Going to cause inflation. We're going to make our currency, the euro, the kroner, the whatever, the hryvnia, whatever. We're going to the ruble, even the dollar. We're going to make it less yen. We're going to make them less valuable, and then we'll sell more stuff. Okay.
Well,
it seems like a good idea on the face of it. But the fact of the matter is you are now paying your help with cheaper yen or euros or dollars. It means that when a government accommodates exports by causing inflation of their own fiat currency, it means they are necessarily impoverishing their own people. They are working for less. Right? They're giving their products away. They say, look, we'll give you our products. We have cars and computers, and we'll sell them for next to nothing. At least we'll sell them down where we don't actually make a real profit in terms of purchasing power. We might make them a numerical profit because the dollars or the yen or the euro, we're selling it a higher number, and it may look like, but we are giving things away in terms of purchasing power. I mean, I don't know that inflation really serves the countries that are trying to implement it. It serves the multinational corporations that are engaged in exports. I will give you that. But does it serve the ordinary person in Japan, Europe, United States?
Of course not.
I don't think it does.
Well, of course not. That's not what they're trying to help. And again, when you look at the currency markets, I mean, it's the biggest market traded. There's, you know, what, trillions involved in the forex markets and so forth. So to me, they're probably just running these currencies in order. Somebody's making a killing in the background. Someone is making a literal killing in the background.
You know, something I just thought about today, and I was writing in another article that I'm working on, and I'm not going to too long to do the whole thing right now, but we've had a pure fiat currency. I was thinking in terms of the bankruptcy of the government of the United States. Arguably, the government has been completely bankrupt since 1971, and you could trace it back earlier than that. 68 is when we stopped redeeming dollars for silver in this country. 34, they took away the gold from domestically, and in 71 they stopped redeeming the dollar with paper dollar with that was held internationally. All right, they stopped doing it for the American people in 34. They stopped doing it for foreigners in 71. So the point is, classical economics indicates that when you pay your bills, you pay with gold or silver, or at least a currency that's redeemable in gold and silver. When the government completely separates itself from gold and silver, which it did between 33, 34, and on up to 1971, by 1971 at the latest, the government had admitted, look, we aren't paying our bills. They haven't paid their bills, not really. They haven't paid them. They're discharged them. You can discharge bills with fiat currency, but you can't pay them. There's a difference. They haven't really paid their bills since 1971, any of them. And the implication is the government has been technically bankrupt now since, what, 29, 39, 45 years, 44 years, 45, something like that. We've already been bankrupt for, you know, 40, 50 years in this country. The government has been bankrupt. And where I'm going with this is
And the evidence is classically they're not paying their debts with gold and silver. What are they paying them with? They're paying them with fiat dollars. Just as Europe is paying their debts, or at least attempting, they are discharging their debts with fiat dollars. Pieces of paper that have no intrinsic value. Not really being paid. I'm beginning to see that fiat currencies are a characteristic of governments that are bankrupt. They can't pay their bills. They are insolvent. They don't have enough gold and silver to pay their bills. They are bankrupts. And what do the bankrupts do? They say, I know, let's get these people to take these worthless pieces of paper. Well, this is how we will hold the system together. Well, I'm beginning to look at that and realize that the fiat currency is an attribute characteristic of bankruptcy. That's what it's all about. This is script that bankrupt governments use. And it's going on around the world. How long can it continue? How long can we continue to operate in bankruptcy where no one is actually paying their bills? What do you think, Melody?
Well, I think we're at break time.
Are we?
That's how long, yeah.
Yeah, all right, saved by the piano player. All right, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a couple moments. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis again here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. I've got an article here from CNSnews.com. Headline is Economist Tells Congress, U.S. may be in worse fiscal shape than Greece. Boston University economist Loris Kotlikoff is a former senior economist on President Ronald Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors. Kotlikoff recently spoke to members of the Senate Budget Committee in written and oral testimony. During that testimony, Mr. Kotlikoff said, "The point I want to make across the board is that our nation is broke.
It's not going to be broke in 10 years or 15 years or 50 years. It's broke now. Indeed, it may be in worse fiscal shape than any developed country, including Greece. Now, this is a fundamental, this parallels an argument that I've been making for at least 5 years. The debt is too great to be repaid. That means it won't be repaid. That means we are bankrupt. We are insolvent. There are big problems that come from the size of the national debt. However, Mr. Kotlikoff has perhaps invented, or he is at least advocating, a new concept: fiscal gap rather than national debt. And we'll explain this a little bit as we get into this. It says this declaration of national insolvency will no doubt shock those of you who use the officially reported federal debt as a measuring stick for what our country owes. What he's saying is Kotlikoff is saying, look, you guys are all broke. This government is busted right now. Okay? And he's saying this declaration of national insolvency will no doubt shock those of you who use the officially reported federal debt, the national debt that we hear about. They say, oh, there's $18 trillion. And Kotlikoff has previously said, no, there's not. There's over $200 trillion in real debt. All right? And what he's talking about, when he talks about a fiscal gap, he defines it as the difference between our government's projected financial obligations and the present value of all projected future tax and other receipts. He's saying that if the government projects that by 2050, we're going to be paying, who knows, pull a number out of the air, and they said by 2050, we'll be paying $3,000 a month to everyone who's on Social Security. And the number of people on Social Security will have increased by 50% compared to what it is today. And therefore, we can calculate by 2050, we're going to owe this much money to the Social Security recipients. It's not that hard to make a projection of how much money we're going to have to spend 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 50 years from now. But he says you've also got to make another projection. How much revenue will you have? And this, will your revenue be sufficient to match your promised government programs? And he's saying, no, it's not, certainly not at this time. And he says the difference between projected costs and projected revenue creates this fiscal gap. And he's saying, this is what you have to watch. Don't worry about the national debt per se, which is part of the, it impacts the fiscal gap, but the fiscal gap is something much bigger. It's essentially the existing debt plus the unfunded liabilities. Government's promised, oh yeah, we're going to have Social Security for you people. You're going to be able to live large. Government hasn't figured out where it's going to get the money to keep that promise. The result is a fiscal gap. The fiscal gap is 16 times larger than the official U.S. debt, which indicates precisely how useful or useless official debt is for understanding our nation's true fiscal positions. The overall federal government is 58% underfunded. Now, he goes on and he makes some comparisons to Detroit and Social Security and goes on. Virtually, he says, successive Congresses, whether dominated by Republicans or Democrats, have spent the post-war accumulating massive net fiscal obligations, virtually all of which have been kept off the books. Congress, and because they're off the books, the government says, we owe $18 trillion. And Kotlikoff says, no, you don't. You got all this stuff off the books. You got all this essentially secret or unpublished debt that says the total is over $200 trillion, not $18 trillion. That's on the books. Translates into $182 trillion that's off the books. All right, that's like anyone else running a business. Say, well, my income and my expenses work out to about $100,000 a year. But they don't tell you anything about the other $2 million in debt that they're packing. That debt's going to get them.
They don't have the resources to pay off the debt, and that's his argument. He goes on and he says Congress economically arbitrary decisions as to what to put on and what to keep off the books have not been innocent. It's resulted in Enron-type accounting that's been going on for decades under both parties. A positive fiscal gap means that the government is attempting to spend over time more than it can afford. All right? That's what he's saying. Look, here you guys are doing the MasterCard to pay off the Visa to pay off the American Express. You look like you're living large, but you can't sustain this. For example, starting now, and he says, eliminating the fiscal gap would require an immediate 58.5% increase in all federal taxes or 37.7% permanent across-the-board decrease in federal spending. Think about that. And actually hold this thing together right now. They either have to raise taxes by almost 60% or they have to cut spending by almost 40%. But if the government waits 30 years, Kotlikoff is saying, you got to act now, because if the government waits 30 years, it would require a 77% tax increase instead of 58% is what we need right now. He says, in 30 years, you'll need 77% tax increase or a 47% cut in spending, and this would be, and not even 50 years, it's by 2045. 30 years is the time gap he's using here. All right? Now, what do you think is more likely? Do you think Congress will raise taxes now by 58%? Or do you think Congress will wait 30 years and raise taxes by 77%? And the answer is neither. Congress can't raise taxes that much. They're not going to raise taxes. Okay. Do you think it's more likely that they will cut spending by almost 40% right now? Or will they cut government programs and spending by, what does it say here, 50% 30 years down the road? The point I'm getting to, the answer again, is no. They're not going to do either one of them. Which means we are now in a situation that can't be resolved. Congress isn't going to raise taxes because if they do, they're going to get thrown out of office. And they can't raise them enough to make this thing work. Congress is not going to cut government programs, at least not by the amount involved. They're trying. They're trying to cut some programs. We see that in reports about the Defense Department has less money to spend today than it's had in the past, and they are being squeezed and so on. That's evidence government recognizes, look, they're going broke, or they are broke. They are running out of their ability to bamboozle people. Why don't you lend me some more money so I can go buy a new tank or a new F-35 or something? And people are saying, no, you're broke. You're insolvent. You'll never pay back the debts you owe right now. We're not going to lend any more. Government can't raise taxes enough to keep all of these programs running, but government has to be careful about closing down on these, certainly, welfare programs. They'll have people rioting in the streets and burning down parts of cities, and yet they don't have the money to pay their bills. What are they going to do? And the answer, they're really caught. They have mounted this fiat currency tiger. And as I pointed out earlier in the program, it's arguable that fiat currency is evidence of bankruptcy. It's the equivalent of me writing checks on a non-sufficient bank account. Right? I mean, I'm going to go out there and buy myself a new car and buy myself a new home, and anybody looks and says, oh boy, Al's really making it. But the truth is I'm paying for it with checks that can't be redeemed at the bank, which is to say I'm not paying for it at all. I am insolvent. I am bankrupt. That's the reality of it. If I'm writing checks that can't be cashed, that's evidence that I am busted. It's the same thing with the government right now. They are, instead of writing checks that can't be cashed, they're writing bonds that in total won't be redeemed, and they're even issuing these little green pieces of paper and pretending that this will pay debts. But they're little green pieces of paper that you carry around in your wallet. They have no real, any more real value than the check that I've written for $100 million on my bank account. I don't have $100 million. You'll never cash the check. All right? And you're never really going to redeem those paper dollars, at least not with the government. You have, that's another argument that I won't get into right now. But the point in all of us, we are caught. Kotlikoff is warning us that we are caught in a financial circumstance that we are not going to get out. We will not get out painlessly. One way or another, government is going to be forced to admit what has been obvious. Ever since they stopped redeeming their pieces of paper with gold or silver, they've been bankrupt. And whatever debt, if you've loaned any money to the government, you've loaned it to a bankrupt entity. If you've loaned any of your wealth to the government, you've loaned it to a bankrupt entity. And the more debt they go into, the less likely it is they'll be able to pay off their debt. And I believe we are simply getting to a point. We're getting close to the moment where they're going to have to admit that truth to the public. Not just face the truth, but admit it. What do? Can't raise taxes enough to get rid of the debt. Can't cut programs enough to get rid of the debt, at least not voluntarily. The programs may be cut, but they are not going to be cut voluntarily. They'll be cut by circumstances where the money just isn't there. People have to say, oh, gee, sorry about that. What is it? Taxes, spending. They're going to have to try to cause, one of the things they can try to do is cause more inflation, which would be helpful from the government's perspective. It would allow them to pay off existing debt with cheaper dollars, and they'd be less afflicted by interest rates and so on if there was significant inflation. But we've tried QE1, QE2, QE3. Fundamental idea behind them was to cause significant inflation. They weren't entirely ineffective, but they didn't really cause as much inflation as we need. We're caught in some sort of a deflationary period, at least for the moment, which is completely contrary, as far as I can see, to government's interests. And where are we headed then? If we can't inflate, can't raise taxes, can't hold the interest rate down forever, because as we do, we drive capital out of this country. It goes looking, people have got money. I don't want to lend my money for a percent or two. I'm going to take my money and I'm going to invest it in some foreign country that pays 8, 9, 10% interest. As they lower interest rates and say, yay, this is important to maintain the economy, they're driving capital out of the economy. As the money supply shrinks, that's consistent with deflation, that's consistent with depression, economic depression. I mean, everything they're doing right now, we seem to be caught in a place where we can't get out. We can postpone. We can extend and pretend, term coined by the Greeks recently. Extend the loans and pretend they'll be paid someday, but they never will. Part of the lesson in all of this, we are headed for a moment of default. And it's one of the reasons I look at what happens, the price of gold, and gold dropped $30 on Friday, and I don't care. Drop $10 today or 8 or 10 or whatever it was. I don't care. I don't like it, but I don't care. Because I can see that this is still a train wreck in progress. Right now, you and I are riding on a train that is already, we may be 30 cars back from the engine, but this thing is already starting to wreck. And we may be still moving, and people say, yes, the train is just fine. But we're in a train, we are in a, if the train wreck hasn't already started, it's going to. And we're going to get into that, and how do you protect yourself? One of the ways, gold and silver, guns and ammo, you know, food and water, get out of debt. The evidence is here if you care to see it, if you care to look at it, if you agree with the analyses. And if it is, you have to do something, because we are not talking about a problem, in my opinion, that's 5 years from now.
We're talking about a problem that could manifest at any time. It might be a couple of years. It might be next summer, this coming summer. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom at Financial Survival, and we'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.